This is important, by the way, not just for understanding the human meaning of Soviet life, though this itself is important, but it's also for understanding part of the cause, maybe one might argue the main cause for the crisis that would bring down this whole communist system in Russia and the Soviet Union, which was a crisis not just about structures, especially about the economy, but it was a crisis about people's attitudes, about their values, about their desires, in particular, which produced a growing alienation from this system. First, it's useful to recognize that these underlying changes in thinking, in expectations, in values that turned so many away from the system, behind these, underlying these, were tangible changes in people's social life. Changes that had effect on how they thought about the world, about their expectations. Changes really in how people lived every day. One of these important changes was urbanization. There's a simple but powerful fact. Beginning in the mid-1960s, Soviet society for the first time became an urban society. Most Soviet citizens lived in cities and towns, not in the countryside, not in state farms or collective farms. They lived often in big cities as well. Consider one telling statistic. In 1926, only 18% of the Soviet population lived in cities. By 1985, 65% lived in cities, and in the European parts of Russia, this urbanization was even more extensive. And city life, of course, exposes people to many things that undermine traditional ways of thinking. New and complex problems, hardships, stresses. New opportunities, various forms of frustrations, new ideas, new attitudes, and relative freedom of city life, giving people a taste for greater personal freedom. No less important, and paralleling this, the USSR became a more educated society in these years. As late, for example, as 1959, already after Stalin's death, fewer than 10% of workers and peasants, the vast majority of the population, had more than 4 years of elementary education, which was the minimum required by law. By 1984, by contrast, 82% of workers and peasants had much more than a primary education. Most had at least 7 years of education, and a large and growing part of the population, including among the lower classes, had secondary education, which allowed them to move into more responsible jobs, technical education, and even university education. All of these groups were growing. And the younger you were, the more likely it was that you were going to see higher education. Related to this urbanization, to this education, to the economic changes that went with it, was the growth of a large, educated middle class, something truly new in Russian history at this scale. Office workers, professionals, specialists of all sorts. By 1985, in fact, 30% of the labor force was officially classified as white collar, and half of these had a post-secondary education, some degree of a college education. This is an enormous new middle class with education, living in cities. There were other changes that also affected the way people looked and understood the world. One was a dramatic increase in small private property, something that, of course, was encouraged by the government as it was trying to improve people's standard of living. For example, farmers acquired more private plots of land for marketing produce. And in fact, city dwellers were allowed to also buy from collective farms or state farms, were allowed to buy plots of land where they could spend the summer built with a little house that they might establish there, and they can farm in a modest way for their own consumption or sometimes for selling on the market. Indeed, both farmers and city dwellers spent more and more time, gave more and more of their energies to these little private plots of land, which once more began to produce more and more produce that would show up in the markets. To alleviate the housing shortage, citizens were also encouraged to pool their resources and build cooperatively owned apartments where they had a greater sense of property, a greater sense of ownership. And finally, and most visibly, was a massive spread of small personal property among Soviet citizens, of consumer goods, radios and record players and tape recorders and televisions and refrigerators and washing machines and vacuum cleaners and cameras and pianos and books and furniture and china and glassware and jewelry and clothes. It goes on and on. And much of this was displayed in a prominent place in people's apartments. where one could see the material goods that one owned. One tended not to hide them away in closets. In other words, ironically, developed socialism, as it was called during Brezhnev's years, meant in part that citizens became more bourgeois, one might say, in the sense of materialistic values than at any time since the 1920s. And it became much more of a mass phenomenon. At the same time, it's important to recognize that people's desires and expectations exceeded realities. Most people remained relatively poor. And for those with money, supplies were often short, the goods they wanted to buy were hard to find, and quality was often disastrous. Finally, I would mention, in terms of the social changes that affected people's thinking, was a growing awareness of the larger world, truly a rising cosmopolitanism. Soviet people were increasingly exposed to ideas and images of the West through films and movies and TV, through visiting tourists and business people and journalists and indeed students such as I was in the Soviet Union in the early 80s. Also, increasing numbers of Russians were allowed to travel abroad, at least to Eastern Europe or the Baltic states, which seemed to them to be their West and indeed had a more Western style and manner of life. All of these conditions had a deep and lasting impact on social and cultural and political mentalities of large numbers of Russians, fostering discontent, even dissent. This is my topic next time.